His name is D's Nuts.
Hello, you're very welcome to the season finale, episode 8 of the 99% podcast.
You're Lucy Ma Daly.
And you are Michael McAndrew.
Yes, the 99% podcast is the podcast for the rest of us, the podcast where we discuss
everything.
Everything from politics to culture to technology.
We really have a niche nailed down.
Yeah, we really do.
We're joined this week once again by our 99% world correspondent, and he is, of course, Shane Kelly.
Hello.
Shane, what have you been doing since we spoke to you last?
We sent you across the world.
Have you
Shane.
Visited any more exciting foreign lands to report back to us on?
Budget's been tight recently. I went to Ireland, actually, to Dublin.
Oh, wow.
Went to
Dublin, wow.
They had a big stadium there.
Oh, that's
Croke
cool.
Croke Park. They had a game on, some semi final.
Sports ball?
Hurdling.
Do people hop over hurdles?
Galway, no, they hit, Ireland,
they hit other people with sticks.
That's the Irish way.
Yep,
it's the Irish way.
No other way. Galway in the Ireland final. Woo!
So, as we told you last week, this is our season finale of the 99%.
Yeah, we better make this a good one.
We better make it a good one because after today, we are going on hiatus. No episodes ever again.
No.
Education takes priority.
Indeed it does.
It is priority.
But season two.
Well, if education took priority. Okay, never mind.
Season two, 2016, bigger and better than ever with new special guests and fun stuff. And we'll be recording every week and it's going to be great.
Yep. But this week we do have an interview with Keira Judge. Keira Judge is... She's done a lot of things. She won The Young Scientist with her friends, Emer Hickey and Sophie Healy.
Her colleagues.
Thou?
Don't ask me.
What are you implying there?
They won the Google Science Fair. They have become ambassadors for young women in science. So... she's done a lot of stuff.
And we'll also be talking along with her to Ellie Loughran, who was with Keira last week at the Outbox Incubator, which is this fascinating project that was in London. And it's all about encouraging science, technology, engineering and math work, I suppose, in young women in Ireland and I guess the UK is by extension. Mm-hmm. So we'll be talking to them later on and it will be very, very interesting, I'm sure.
Yep, absolutely.
So Michael...
yeah.
What are we talking about first today? I think it's a follow-up on a story we had two episodes ago,
yeah.
Is it?
The youngest mayor in the world.
In the world.
Wow.
He's mayor of a small town in the United States.
Of course he is.
And, well, this week there was this shocking, because he, of course, the previous mayor was his brother. And he released this week a shocking campaign ad about his brother. And I think we're going to hear some of it now. So would you like to play the ad?
I would if I could, but I can't.
That's unprofessional.
You never told me to put it in the thing, did you?
I just did, anyway.
You just told me there. I can put it in now.
Somebody's asking us, where is James McAvoy?
All right, do you want to talk about it, and then I can pop it in.
So basically, I have nothing to say.
You've nothing to say?
Sorry.
Okay, what do I look up on the tubes?
Just look up, I said I put a link in the Google Doc.
Oh?
First thing.
Yeah. Oh, all right, I didn't know if it was a YouTube video.
No, I don't have to
talk. Oh, God.
Start from the very start.
Well, I have to put it into my thing and convert and blah, blah, blah.
Oh, Jesus.
You know, illegal stuff.
Longer than 20 minutes.
No, it's not. It's like 2.5 minutes. Can you not just plug that into the laptop?
Yeah, I can. That's what I'm going to do.
But who are you?
All right, let's play this thing.
This is what happens behind the scenes on the 99%.
Now, I don't have to tell this panel that politics is rough in America. And, you know, we here at Real Time are always looking for examples of the zeitgeist. And we found one This week, there's a small town called Dorset, Minnesota, and it's a very small town. They're so small they don't really have a mayor. What they do is at their vegetable festival, they sell a raffle for a dollar, and that's how you elect the mayor, whoever has the most raffle. And so the mayor for the last few years has been Bobby Tufts. He's 6 years old. So now his brother, Jimmy Tufts, is running to replace him. And
you should see this.
Bobby ran
this
an
little
attack
redhead guy.
Jimmy, that I just think shows how rough politics has got. Would you show that ad, please?
Jimmy Tufts says he has what it takes to be mayor of Dorset. But what do we really know about Jimmy Tufts? There's no record of him before 2012. He promises new ideas. Yet every time we play hide and seek, he hides in the shower. Every time. Jimmy says he'll be tough on crime, but he's afraid of the vacuum cleaner. And where were all his toys made? China. Jimmy Tufts, just another career politician. Call your mommy and tell her that Jimmy can run, but he can't hide. Well, except in the shower. Don't let Jimmy Tufts do to our town what he did to his diaper.
So there you go. It's a campaign ad for Jimmy Tufts, and that clip was from the HBO show Real Time with Bill Maher.
Bill Maher.
Maher. He says Maher, so I'll
but
say
it's Maher.
It's Maher in
the
Irish.
He doesn't know how. He, just
he doesn't know the
he's
Irish way. Yeah,
it's the proper way.
Maher.
Right.
I'm into the Periscope. Somebody just said we sounded 40 years old. Thank you.
They're just insulting us. These Periscope.
He might have
people.
Been talking about Bill Maher, but anyway.
Oh, he could. Oh, he was probably talking about the person who he thought that the person doing the voiceover was Jimmy.
I think it was me, though. I think it was me he thought was 40 years old.
All right. Lucien, an American, has died of the plague.
I saw this headline, and I mean, there's a lot of horrible stuff has happened this week in America, but this really is the worst. An American citizen has died of plague. I mean, I don't know. It's been... Well, it's been about a decade since this last happened, I think.
Well, what's plague?
The plague is the worst thing that can happen to humanity because it just kills, like, everybody.
The plague is caused by a bacteria.
Thanks, woman. Shut up.
Okay.
It's not Ebola.
It's going to play for me, too. So, Michael, read this out to us.
Well, I think the thing to consider here is that it was an elderly person, not just, like, a perfectly healthy...
But, of course, if one person has the plague, surely everyone's going to catch the plague.
An elderly person... No. No.
No?
No. An elderly person died from the plague this month. Utah health officials said Thursday an investigation into how, where, and when the person was infected with the flea-borne infection is going on. The person did not travel to an area where plague is common. No other information about the patient is known at this time. People are usually infected after a flea becomes infected from a rodent such as a rat, squirrel, or chipmunk, and then transmits it to a person by biting them. Patients usually develop symptoms between 2 and 6 days after exposure. They include generally feeling sick, a sudden fever, abdominal pain, nausea, and vomiting. Patients can be successfully treated with antibiotics, but only if they are diagnosed and begin treatment early.
Okay, so I don't think we're personally at risk of developing plague, are we?
No. I mean, they say that this is the first time the plague has been... is the first case of the plague in Utah since 2009. Like, it's not... It's not, you know, contagious,
yeah,
really.
Yeah, okay.
Doesn't sound like the worst thing ever.
No.
Not really.
No, definitely not. No, it's fine.
In other hilarious news... An elderly Chinese woman has stunned doctors by sprouting what looks like a unicorn horn from her head. The villager has become known to local residents as the Unicorn Woman, since the abnormal growth has appeared and taken over the top of her head. But although the 13-centimeter-long single large mass is already a massive size, medical professionals are baffled by its appearance. There's a photo here.
Oh, whoa.
Of the woman
Holy
with the unicorn horn. It's a disgusting
it looks like a
growth.
Pigeon.
looks like a pigeon look like on the top.
It looks like some sort
of oyster.
It doesn't
really look like a unicorn horn.
It is
horn.
Horrific.
Oh, it's brutal.
It says, Liang Xuhian, the 87-year-old, the 87-year-old is a resident of Gion Village in Xiang City in southwest China's Sichuan Lovely. Province. According to Wang Xiaozhan, Xiang Jingzhang's Zhuzhen's son, his mother had something resembling a black mole growing on her head 7 or 8 years ago. Xiaozhan said, "My mother complained about this mole-like growth on her head that itched all the time. We found ways to cure her, it's using traditional Chinese medicine, and then left it be. 2 years ago, however, the mole gave way to a small horn-like mass the size of a little finger. Zhuzhen accidentally broke the small horn this February, and in its place, her current horn began growing rapidly over the past 6 months. Zhuzhen said, now the horn hurts my mother and prevents her from sleeping. It also bleeds from time to time.
Lovely.
Oh, God.
This is absolutely horrific.
And, like, this isn't... I'm looking at the picture. Doctors
in Sichuan diagnosed the so-called unicorn horn as cutaneous skin tumor that has the appearance of a horn. Often small and benign, the growth can in some cases be much larger and malignant. Xiaozhen said doctors believe they can remove the growth through surgery, but the family has its reservations due to Zhizhen's old age and are considering other options. My mother is old and the horn is on her head, which is a very sensitive area. I'm not confident in surgery. If something goes wrong, it would be terrible.
She has a giant horn growing out of her head.
I think what could be worse? I mean,
it is benign.
Would
though.
Death be worse? I don't
like,
know.
It's not like an ice cream cone shaped horn. It's just a big.
It's
lump.
Just a big lump, but it's preventing her from sleeping. They say.
Yeah, but it's not gonna kill her.
Well,
no, because it's benign.
Yeah, Michael. I think it's time for us to talk about American politics briefly, which means it's time to play the music.
Yeah, let's do it.
This never gets old, ever.
No.
All right, wait for the thing to kick in now in 3 seconds. This gets me so pumped up. 1, 2, 3, and... Let me tell you a little story about how I was raised. Every day work, every day pray.
I God, can't believe family, you know friends, the lyrics
yeah, everybody
to this thing.
Sins. I didn't never quit, and a quitter never wins. Help folks in need, don't right, fall for greed. A brother's man is weak, so think before you speak. If you love him, let him know. If you hate him, let it go. Fast can be fun, but sometimes you need slow. God is all good, and heaven is for real. So listen up now, because this is how I feel.
All right, we got enough of that.
We've had enough. So, Joe Biden, current vice president and a man who likes to make this face a lot, is considering a presidential run. He has, of course, been President Obama's vice president for going on 8 years. His son, Bo Biden, died a few months ago. And, Bill apparently...
Oh, really? How did that happen?
I think he had cancer.
God.
I'm not
what
certain.
Interesting.
He was pretty young. He was in his 30s or 40s.
Oh, God.
Can you be vice president for as long as you want?
Yes, you can, yes. Yeah. So, but apparently before he died, Bo told Joe Biden that he wanted Joe to run for president. But there's a story out today, and it says the vast majority of Democratic Party insiders don't believe Joe Biden will run, despite evidence that he is seriously contending, considering a bid. That's the assessment of the Politico Caucus from this website, politico.com. They are strategists, activists, and operatives in Iowa and New Hampshire. Their responses come as speculation swirls about whether the vice president will jump into the Democratic primary against his longtime colleague and the likely nominee, Hillary Rodham Clinton. He's a truly wonderful man, universally loved by New Hampshire Democrats, but I can't imagine him undertaking such a monumental underdog effort at such a difficult time for his family, and with the massive monetary, people, and campaign advantages of the Clinton campaign. And New Hampshire Democrats are referring to the recent death of Biden's son, former Delaware Attorney General Bo Biden. Biden has held conversations with donors, advisors, and strategists about the process, but 8 in 10 insiders don't think he'll actually join the race. They say it's too late in the game for Biden to mount a serious bid unless Clinton's campaign implodes, a prospect that most saw as unlikely. So we have a situation here where Joe Biden is basically, if he were to run, he'd be gambling on the assumption that Hillary will be out of the race at some point, which is almost sort of what Bernie Sanders is gambling on. Yeah. Although Bernie is a kind of the kind of activist who is really just trying to generate conversation when he runs, whereas Joe is a fairly moderate Democrat. And if Joe were to run, I mean, his policies are pretty much identical to Hillary's. So he'd just be a backup candidate were Hillary to fall out of the race. He'd be backup. But I don't think he'd generate the same widespread support as she would in the general public.
Yeah.
Wait, who votes for the Democrat? Who decides who
the candidate?
Sworn? Yeah.
The Democratic Party members around in the electoral colleges around the country, they have these primaries in New Hampshire, Iowa.
And so do the people vote or just people in the party?
People in the party. But it's the same as right now in Britain, how Labour Party members are voting for their leader, Jeremy Corbyn, Andy Burnham.
But but if Joe Biden ran there, then could he split the vote between himself and Hillary?
Well, I mean, if Joe Biden runs for Democratic nomination, I mean, there can only be one winner of the Democrat nomination. So
he'd have to run as an independent.
I mean, but he wouldn't do that.
He wouldn't.
He's only running as backup for Hillary because he doesn't want Sanders getting the nomination and then losing the election for the Democrats because Sanders isn't mainstream enough. So what could happen is that Hillary, I talked last week about my hypothetical situations, and basically a situation that could happen, we have Jeb Bush, Republican nominee, we have Trump as an independent, and then we have Hillary.
Yeah.
Trump splits the vote, Hillary wins. But if we had Bernie Sanders just can't generate enough support in that general. So we'll end up, Jeb will be elected, and then the Democratic Party have lost out. So what they want is that they want to have Joe, and I think Joe wants himself to be backup in case Hillary doesn't work out, because he is a far more mainstream and accessible candidate than Bernie is, so he can be there in case of that. But I would prefer Hillary to Joe.
Would you think people would vote for Joe Biden?
I don't think so. I don't think he'd win an election against Jeb Bush.
I think Bernie Sanders would probably do better, would he?
Maybe. But I think...
Do the people in the Democrat Party support Bernie Sanders and his policies?
A lot of them do. I mean, most of the people, though, who are supporting Bernie Sanders are really people who are disillusioned from the bipartisan system and just want candidates with strong policies. The core of the Democratic Party, I'd say, are finding Bernie's campaign too far left for their liking. They want a more moderate person like Hillary or... in a less a less interesting character, but similar in terms of policy, who is Joe Biden. I mean, if I had a choice between Hillary and Joe, I mean, I'm sure Joe is a very, very decent person, but the novelty of having a woman as president and how important it is that that happens during my lifetime, I think outweighs Joe, who really is exactly the same as Hillary and is just a male version who doesn't have the same significance were he to be elected. He's just another elderly white man as president.
Yeah.
So that's politics for this week. And I think by the time we get back to the 99%, be that next year, we're going to have nominees probably. Who knows?
Probably,
we'll be close to securing. We'll know who'll be in the election. That's a strange thought.
Oh, it's not until 2017. No?
The election's in November 2016.
Right.
And
the
nominees will be decided by next June or July. So we'll be coming up close to those. But all the debates will have happened. I'm sure we'll be covering it on our Twitter and Facebook, and we'll probably do a Christmas special in which we might catch up on some stuff.
Yep.
So, Michael, I do the boring politics, and you do the exciting technology. Tell me about the iPhone 6S.
Well, we know a lot now about the upcoming iPhone 6S. There will be an event held on the 9th of September.
Oh, so soon after my birthday.
Yeah.
There can't be that much major change in it.
No, there isn't. Basically, the big thing is the case is going to be stronger. It's made of a higher grade aluminium.
So it doesn't bend.
It's also going to be 0.2, it's going to be 2 millimeters thicker. So 0.2 centimeters thicker. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be, instead of the usual faster, thinner thing, it's going to be faster and thicker. It's also going to have a 12 megapixel camera rather than the 8 megapixel camera that's in there right now. It's going to have 4K capability, so you'll be able to record in 4K.
That's nice. Anyway.
It's going to be a little bit faster.
Oh, I love me for some.
Doesn't 4K. Have that right now. It's going to be a little bit faster. The screen is going to be a bit better. Mm. I mean, that's it.
The usual stuff. Really.
The usual stuff. But there's, I mean, there is some speculation that the name will be changed because iPhone 6S Plus is like.
It sounds so stupid
because they last year they brought out the 6 Plus.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
So iPhone 6S Plus just sounds like the worst name ever for a phone. It's like the Galaxy S6
Edge. It's sort of like, it's the phone equivalent of Batman v Superman : Dawn of Justice in 3D.
Well, yeah. did you see the new Samsung Galaxy Note?
Nope.
It's the Note 5, and they've also come out with the Galaxy S6 Edge Plus.
What?
The Samsung Galaxy S6 Edge Plus. That's the name of it.
What a mouthful.
So this is bigger than the normal Edge.
It's bigger. You know how they have the Galaxy 6
yeah.
Edge?
Yeah,
the S6 Edge. Yeah, the curved thing. It's just basically a bigger version of that. They should have just called it a Note Edge. The Note has a 5.7-inch screen. Yeah.
When is somebody going to invent a phone that everybody likes and that everyone keeps and no one ever invents another phone ever again? Like there should be
the iPhone.
Listen, there should be the perfect phone, right? It has everything you could ever want and they never need to make a new model.
But why would they bother?
Yeah, but it might be too expensive.
But then you'd never have to buy another phone. It would last you forever. So it's a phone that lasts forever.
Yeah.
It has the greatest camera resolution that can ever be made by mankind. It has every feature.
The screen.
That's impossible because this
you survey every person on Earth to find out what screen size they want or else you sell it in different
screen
sizes.
But technology's always getting better.
Exactly. So
might be an amazing camera right now.
Yeah.
Will be a crap camera in 5 years.
But how? But I mean, if we're looking at the video right now, and once you get to the point when the video that you film on a phone can be projected in high resolution on an IMAX screen and look good and be good quality, then why would you continue? Well, who needs better video resolution than
that?
Do you want to project on the moon? I mean, what is there left to do?
Because you can.
Holograms and stuff, you know, they pop up on the screen.
But number one, because you can, and also because phone cameras are quite flawed in some ways. Like, you can't get depth of field.
Yeah.
You can't zoom optically.
Yes.
You don't have manual controls. You know, there's like loads of things that... And you want, basically, there's so much room for improvement of phone cameras. You want them to get as close to what professional cameras are like now.
I just think
possible.
That before I die, there should be a phone that just does everything and there's no more ideas for perfection.
Well, but you see, I think at the moment, there's a lot of emphasis over how many megapixels it is.
Yeah,
like, what's the resolution? You know, what's the resolution of the screen? What's the processor clock speed and stuff? But I think what will start happening is they'll start focusing more towards the experience. So how easy it is to use and, like, features on the camera, like manual controls and being able to zoom with, I don't know how they would do that, but being able to zoom in, you know, without that crappy digital zoom and depth of field. And, you know, there's a lot more to what makes a great camera than just how many megapixels it is.
Yeah, yeah.
And what the resolution, like 1080p from a 1080p from a cinema camera looks like a million times better than a 4K from a phone camera, you know. So, but the 6S... It's going to look exactly the same. It's the S version, so, you know.
Okay.
It's nothing exciting. I had an iPhone 5, and I moved from that last year to the OnePlus One.
And you're going for Motorola next, are you?
Probably Motorola next, but I won't upgrade this for another year.
Okay.
I typically hold on to phones for 2 years.
Cool.
So I think it's time now for our interview. Interview, yes.
No introduction necessary.
I always say that.
So let's just go straight to this interview with Kira Judge and Ellie Loughran. And
all right.
Okay.
Enjoy. So I'm here with Kira Judge and Ellie Loughran, two people who took part in the Outbox Incubator very recently. Kira Judge is the winner of the Young Scientists in 2013 with Emer Hickey and Sophie Healy. Is it Tho or Thou?
Thou, yeah.
Thou, okay, cool.
Yeah, you had it.
as well as the winners of the Google Science Fair in 2014. You are also named, Kira, one of Time's top 25 most influential teens, 2014. Founding member of the Digital Youth Council. Speaker at many conferences. So you're quite an accomplished person. What age are you, 17?
17, yeah.
That's
a lot of stuff.
I mean, how did it start? So obviously, Young Scientist was where it first started for you. But I mean, how did you get interested in science to begin with?
The Being a Young Scientist really triggered that journey. But the funny thing is how it triggered my interest in science altogether, because I was a kid. I was about 5 years old and I was visiting my brother, because he actually did the Young Scientist before me, and my sister, who is very much a family thing. And I remember I was looking at his stand, and then something stand beside him caught my eye, and it was a goldfish, because the girls in the stand next to him had done a project on the memory of goldfish and see if it really was only 3 seconds long, which I can now confirm to be false, so you've all learned something. But that didn't really matter to me at the time. All that really mattered was my interest in this goldfish, because I'd always had an interest in animals. And I guess that was the moment, you know, I hadn't really realized that connection or that thought that had been triggered in my mind just yet, but that was the defining moment for me that caused me to take an interest in science. Because I saw it as something that, you know, is to do with my interests. I saw it as something that could be related to what I was interested in, which at that stage was animals.
Right. And so you started messing around with different science things. I mean, how did you come up with the project that you chose for the Young Scientists, and why did you feel like you should should enter it in the Young Scientists?
So it was all kind of second nature, really, to me that I was going to enter Young Scientist. So when it came to it, I was thinking of ideas. I'd already entered in first and second year, and then I decided to enter with my schoolmates Aimer and Sophie. And then we were thinking of ideas, throwing around things that we could do. And Aimer was gardening with her mom. And she found these like nodule things on the root of her pea plants that when she was gardening with her mom, and she didn't know what they were because they weren't really very good at gardening. So she brought them into her science teacher, because we were studying plant biology at the time. And our science teacher told us about this bacteria called rhizobium, which lives in the roots of legume plants and helps their growth. But it only works with legume plants. And we were kind of curious to see what else it could do. So that's why we decided to experiment on it with non-legumes. We chose cereal crops in the hopes that if we found it, in fact, it might be able to help in feed the population because of the global food crisis that we're currently facing.
Right, yeah.
So when you won the Young Scientist, were, you know, how many opportunities did it immediately open up for you?
Definitely the BC Young Scientist opened a lot of doors. So obviously the natural thing is it allowed us to progress to the EU Young Scientist, where we were able to represent Ireland on that stage, where we also came first. But also we got to travel, not so much all over the world at that stage, but we got to travel to what really started us off. We got to travel to what really started us off, which was the EU Innovation Convention and the Accenture International Women's Day Conference. Those are just two that I can kind of kick out from the list that we did. And those are what I like to think of as kind of the triggers of everything that followed. And just in generally getting kind of sucked into the public speaking circuit and getting partnerships and, you know, like they know companies such as Accenture, who do great work, the Excited Digital Learning Movement, and of course Silicon Republic.
So your project is basically to tackle the food crisis that, especially in third world countries, is from what I understand, right? Did winning the Young Scientist help you to progress in your project? Like, since winning the Young Scientist, have you been able to progress the project and actually start testing it and implementing it in third world countries, for example?
So, I have been working on, so after the Google Science Fair.
Right, yeah.
We took a step back and decided to see, you know, what else we could do.
Yep.
And how we could bring it to commercialization. And Emer and I realized that really our interests lay in the same area, which was finding out what was actually happening inside the seed and examining the biochemical mechanisms of what was happening inside the seed. So we decided that even though the original project had ended, we were going to work on together as a duo.
Okay.
And start doing more work in that area.
Okay.
And we recently set up our company, Germinate Innovations, and that's kind of the brand under which we're going to carry out this further research.
Yes.
Because it's easier to kind of get grants if you're registered as a company. So we launched that actually at the launch of the Outbox incubator. And then while I was in Outbox, I was working on that for a little bit. But right now, because scientific research is quite time consuming and we have our leaving cert, Germinate Innovations is going to take a slight break just until the end of this year when we go into college. And then we're going to start working ahead, hopefully getting into commercialization.
Okay. Yeah, so you mentioned the Google Science Fair there as well, Kira. I'd love to kind of find out a little bit about the Google Science Fair. That's a global event, right? And you, the three of you won the overall, right?
Yeah, so the that's Google huge. Science Fair, it was a bit, like, it was, yeah. Looking back on it, like, I still can't believe it happened, to be honest. We were at, it was in January of 2014, so this was quite a while ago.
Mm-hmm.
I was looking at the Google Science Fair website because an ad popped up.
Okay.
Obviously, because, you know, search engine optimization and stuff. Like, I did a lot of it science on my laptop, so then it popped up on my laptop, and I said, you know what, I'll take a look. And it took some convincing, but I asked the girls if it would be worth us entering. So we decided, you know what, we're going to give it a go. We did not expect to get very far at all because the competition is so stiff. There were 100,000 entries, more than 100,000 entries. So, you know, and it's a global competition and we're just three girls from Ireland.
Sure.
We decided to go for it. We spent a lot of time on the proposal and working forward with more experiments. And then eventually we got the call that we were part of the final 15, which meant that we got to go to Google headquarters in Mountain View in California. And I actually remember we were in Paris at the time on the science forum thing. So, and we couldn't get Wi-Fi, and we knew that the results had been announced, but we couldn't fit, like, we didn't know whether we had gotten in. So it was a very nervous, like, hour where we knew, like, oh, our fate has been sealed, so, you know, like, it has been decided, but we can't figure out. And then we found out in the hotel, and we were with a lot of our friends from that forum, and it was just a lovely celebration. So we headed off to Google, and we presented to a number of esteemed judges. You know, some of them were astronauts, which I thought was really cool, and I'm still in contact with a lot of the judges now, just because there was a lot of, you know, communication and dialogue, and they want to see us bring our projects forward, all of the finalists. And after, I think, about 2 or 3 days of judging, there was an award ceremony, and to our great surprise, we were in the Google Science Fair. So that was definitely a good memory. It was a good 2014.
So, Ellie, we talked about the Young Scientist competition a minute ago. So what, you've been involved in this as well a few times. So what was your most recent involvement all about?
So I did a project using nanotechnology to diagnose a type of brain tumor. I entered with that this year and did pretty well.
And are you planning on going again in 2016?
I'm not sure. I don't know, because of sixth year and all that. I am continuing the research. I have a research group in St. James Hospital and things, but I'm not sure if I'll actually enter the Young Scientist.
Okay. So you were both in the Outbox incubator just in the past few weeks. So can you just tell us briefly what the whole sort of inspiration and what the whole purpose of that project was?
Of what
of the
project,
of the Outbox incubator.
I think the idea of it was to encourage girls into entrepreneurship, and specifically STEM entrepreneurship. There are a few of them at the moment, and it can be a bit of a boys' club. So it was just pretty much all female. Our kind of leaders there were called STEMettes, and we had a lot of kind of female mentorship, and training, and like people came in from different companies and taught us how to do the different aspects of entrepreneurship. So it was really good.
Okay, so essentially, it's basically an incubator to help young women to get businesses started.
Yeah.
So did you enjoy, like, did you find that it was good?
Yeah, it was really enjoyable. I mean, okay. So the sessions, well, like, the people we had coming in to talk to us were really interesting, and they had a lot of expertise in different things, so it was great to learn about. But also we got to meet, like, all these really cool, like, similar girls to us from around the EU, and it was really cool, like, swapping stories and, you know, hearing all that sort of things. So that was probably the most enjoyable part.
Because it's not in Ireland, it's in London, right?
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
And did you set up, so did everybody kind of set up their own business and try and experiment and get started with things?
Not everyone. A lot of people did.
Okay. And Kira, you also took part in it as well, right?
Yeah, I did. It was a really good, I was actually originally only supposed to be there for 2 weeks. And then I was just having such a great time that I ended up staying for the third.
Okay. Right. Yeah. No, it sounds like a great idea, because there is this big issue in STEM now about, you know, it's very much dominated. The same with, you know,
many other industries.
Like, you have it in business, you have it in, like, certain kind of career paths that are just basically dominated by men. And so it's great to see someone kind of, you know,
Shifting the balance.
And
slightly back in the equal direction.
Mm. Right, yeah, absolutely. And I think I saw the TED talk of the person who founded the Outbox Incubator. She's a very, very interesting person, and it seems like a really, really great idea, you know? So,
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Anne-Marie is the person who founded it. She's the kind of the brains behind the operation.
Yeah.
Her and the Stemets organization. So yeah, they're really on the ball, and they're a fantastic organization altogether.
And does it look as if they're going to be expanding the project to cover wider, you know, areas maybe in the future?
Well, it is all across the EU. I don't know if they're planning to change that, but they are planning to do it next year. Mm-hmm. I think something that was really nice about the program is that when you hear about, like, gender inequality in tech or whatever, it's a lot of times just negative, you know, bad statistics and all this sort of thing. This is a really positive, like, proactive solution to that. So that's why I liked it, and that's kind of why I gravitated towards it.
Right, absolutely. Ooh. And Ellie, how did you get involved with it? Did you see it online and apply, or how did you hear about it?
I did, yeah. See, I'm kind of, like, friends with a lot of people, like Irish people in STEM, so... And I didn't know if I'd get it, but I thought, hey, I'll just apply and go for it.
Yeah, sure.
And I did. So, yeah, it's nice.
So, Ellie, you're kind of an avid blogger as well.
I am, yeah.
So what's your blog?
My blog is Frizzy Rose Ellie. It's just a personal blog. I blog pretty much daily, and have been doing so for a year now. Mm-hmm. And it's really nice. Like, it's, you know, it's great to express yourself, and kind of, because my life has got kind of very exciting over the last year. So it's a really good way to document all of that. So yeah.
You got a long list nomination at the Blog Awards, but you also got a nomination for your book review blog as well.
I did. Yeah. That's that blog's been going for 3 years actually. It's not updated daily, but it's just, you know, I get send books to review. And that's really nice. I'm just waiting. The shortlist gets released in a week or something, so I'm just waiting to see what happens there.
Are you going to be hitting the campaign trail hard to try and win over public votes?
That wouldn't really be my area of expertise, but sure, I'll have a go.
Yeah, I don't think you're supposed to say yes to that.
Hopefully our listeners will get involved with the voting.
But absolutely do. Go out and vote for Ellie's blog. And of course, we'll leave the link to your blog in the show notes for this episode of the show.
Great.
But Kira, maybe coming back to you a bit, you were also involved in the Digital Youth Council. Is she still there? Did she hang up? Or did it? Oh, hang on. We lost connection.
Sorry, dropped out.
No problem. Skype problems, I think. But Kira, yeah. I was just going to ask you about the Digital Youth Council. We actually had Harry McCann on last week's episode. And you're one of the founding members of the Digital Youth Council, right?
Yeah. So actually, I was at Excited Digital Youth Festival last May. So that's quite a while ago, actually. It's more than a year ago, because the Digital Youth Council turned 1 year old in May. Mm-hmm. And I was there, and that's where I met Harry. Mm-hmm. And myself and the two girls, we were working for Excited. On the day that all the students were in, we were in charge of collecting their opinions and then presenting them to the teachers the next day. So we gave that speech, and like one thing that we had said when we were on stage was, you know, the notable enthusiasm of the kids when it came to digital learning. Right. And that was something that Harry also noticed. So he contacted us about a week later, and we ended up founding the Digital Youth Council. And we had a great year. We went to all different tech events, like the Beach Scientist. We had a team of Beach Young Scientists and also the Web Summit. Mm-hmm. And just basically trying to promote as much as we can the implementation of digital technology in education, but also just, you know, bringing the education system into the future, keeping, of course, the old traditional customs and, you know, keeping everything that works, but also looking for things that could improve it.
Right.
So you've done a lot of public speaking engagements, including the Excited Conference and the Irish Digital Forum. So do you have any sort of advice on what message you try to convey or how you go about trying to inspire an audience when they're listening to you?
Well, I guess, like, I never actually tried to get into the public speaking circuit as such, but now that I'm here, I love it, to be honest. Like, I got a nice kind of ease into it with, you know, I talk about my projects, like, even from when I was about 13 years old and I first started doing the Young Scientist. I talk about my projects and my experiences with science. And then I suppose when it comes to the individual speeches and events that I've spoken at, a lot of it depends on both the audience and the specific point that I want to portray. So, for instance, like, I've done things like speaking at Wembley Arena at We Day UK, and that was in front of, like, 12,000 school students, so I had to make sure to, like, you know, keep the content easily understandable, but also kind of try and inspire people, young people, to step outside the box, because that's something that the young people really need. Sure. But then when I'm lucky enough to be in front of an audience of people, of older people, say, in business or in industry, then I realize that I have an opportunity to maybe actually affect change, to help young people like me. So I try to, you know, show people and give suggestions on ways that adults and influential people in industry or in politics could, you know, help the young people, not just of Ireland, but the young people of the world, to kind of begin to innovate and break that old-fashioned thing that, you know, you have to grow up before you can make your change on the world. Young people can make just as much change, and that's what I try to portray no matter where.
Sure. You know, it's kind of, I think we're in a very kind of innovative and we're in a very innovative time where there's a lot of change going on, and it's becoming more where, you know, teenagers and young people can make more change, and they're kind of becoming more empowered to make change. And it sounds, Kira, like you're obviously very, very much promoting that in your message that you send to people.
Definitely, so, without a doubt. It's important.
Yeah, definitely. Well, Kira and Ellie, it was great to talk to you. Kira, is there anything that you want to promote? Any place that people can find you on the web before we end our conversation?
Not really. Nothing springs to mind. Just, you know, if any young people are listening and they want to start doing things like what me and Ellie are doing, like what Harry, who you had on last week, is doing, you know, just get out there, get on Twitter. There's, you know, it's all over Twitter when things are happening. Sign up for programs like the Outbox Incubator and just, you know, don't be afraid to step outside your comfort zone and try something if you want.
Absolutely.
Where can people find you online, Ellie?
On my blog, freezerozelli.blogspot.ie. Or on Twitter at Frizzy Roselli.
Perfect.
Cuckoo.
Well, Kira, Ellie, it was great talking to you. Thank you very much.
Thanks very much.
Okay.
Bye. So thanks again to Kira and Ellie for that fascinating interview. We definitely recorded that just now. We're definitely not saying this before the interview is recorded.
That's very funny.
That's not how we run the show. We're professionals. We do things in the order in which we say that they're done.
Now, we're going to record the interview later on, but I'm sure it's
I'm sure it was great. Sure, I mean, if they canceled, then we're just going to pretend that we never had them on in the first place.
Yeah. Yeah.
So It's time now for my favorite segment.
Okay.
And that is Nicolas Cage film of all the week, featuring Bill Murray as the president. Go.
Cue the music.
Nicolas Cage film of the week.
It's Nicolas Cage film of the week, featuring Bill Murray as the president. Every week we pick a Nicolas Cage film from years gone by. I talk about it briefly. We recommend you to go out and watch it and send us your reviews in order to win exclusive 99% merchandise. No one's actually sent in a review of any of these films. This week's Nicolas Cage film of the week is National Treasure : Book of Secrets, also known in some territories as National Treasure 2 : Book of Secrets. It was made in 2007. It is a sequel to National Treasure. Returning director John Turteltaub, returning producer Jerry Bruckheimer, starring Nicolas Cage, Diane Kruger, Justin Bartha, John Voight, Harvey Keitel, new cast member Ed Harris, and it's basically the same as the first National Treasure, except they go on the road, they go to Europe, we get to see Paris, we get to see London, there's a great heist scene in Buckingham Palace, and they go all over the place, I guess, but a lot of it's set in the US too. And it ends in the greatest location for film action of all time, Mount Rushmore. Have either of you seen Book of Secrets?
Yes.
No.
Michael, do you prefer National Treasure or National Treasure Book of Secrets?
It's been such a long time ago since I've seen them, I couldn't say. Mm. I'd have to watch them again now, because I mean my taste in music has
go watch them. Go watch them.
I'm gonna. That's my homework.
Go watch. You're gonna watch them.
Yes, to watch
both. Before our next episode, you can watch them. So,
just throwing a load of money in my pocket.
Nice. Look at you. So, Book of Secrets is a lot of fun, and it's while maybe I don't know. It's equally good to the first film. I love them both equally, I'd say. Oh yes, and also Bruce Greenwood is in it as the U.S. president who Nicolas Cage kidnaps.
Spoiler.
Speaking of Nicolas Cage, before the show.
There's a new.
We have two things
to talk about.
Okay. What's
so the first thing is that Nicolas Cage has a new film coming out called Pay the Ghost.
Yes.
And he released a post.
I remember last year. Yeah. It was last year. Like we were on a camping trip together.
And I get this news on my phone. Nicolas Cage to star in Pay the Ghost.
Oh, I forgot about that.
And we were just so delighted.
Well,
that this film
you were
exists.
So delighted. That I was this so film happy. Exists.
This film is soon to be released, and I swear the poster for it is magnificent. Nicolas Cage. His face photoshopped onto someone else's head, John Travolta's maybe, standing in a dark alleyway with these little ghost children dancing in the background.
Wait, why is his head photoshopped on?
Because he refused to do a poster shoot. So they had to take an image of his face from the movie and stick it onto someone's face.
Why?
This happens all the time. Bruce Willis, it happens every time. Every time Bruce Willis is on a poster, it's not really his head.
Why don't they do posters?
Because these actors have tantrums and they refuse to come in and stand in front of a green screen like look like this to take a poster. It's not part of their contract. Bruce Willis, speaking of which, was fired this week from Woody Allen's new film. But anyway, we'll speak of that another time. Probably not. So yeah, Pay the Ghost. And Michael, you also had a Nicolas Cage related item to discuss.
Yeah, there's a new study that says that the number of people drowned by falling into a pool correlates with the number of films Nicolas Cage has appeared in.
Wow. In that year.
In that
given year.
So, for example, in 1999, it's not a perfect correlation, but there is correlation, and it's positive correlation. In 1999, Nicolas Cage starred in two films. There were 109 drownings. In 2000, he starred in two films. There were 102 drownings. In 2001, he starred in two films. There were 102 drownings. In 2003, there were three films, 98 drownings. In 2002. In 2003, he starred in one film. There were 85 drownings. In 2004, one film.
You know what that one film was? National Treasure.
National Treasure.
Yeah.
In 2002.
2005.
In 2005, two films, 96 drownings. Three films, 98 drownings. Four films, 123
one of those four
drownings.
Films, one of those 2007 films
this
was Book
crazy.
Of Secrets.
So there's a correlation.
And what website can people look up these graphs on?
TylerVision.com.
Do you just type it?
Spurious correlations. There's some more interesting correlations in here. The U.S. spending on science, space, and technology correlates with suicides by hanging, strangulation, and suffocating.
Cheerful stuff.
That's kind of weird.
So the more to spend on science, the more
per capita cheese consumption correlates with the number of people who died by becoming strangled in their bedsheets.
But listen, all this is a way of trying to persuade people to not do these. They're trying to stop Nicolas Cage from making films, stop people from eating cheese, and stop the government from spending on science by making it seem as if they're leading to bad things.
It's funny because what it's trying to prove is if you do a scientific study to prove that medicine can help people, right? Mm-hmm. What they're trying to say is you can prove that anything correlates with anything.
Yeah.
And it doesn't mean anything. Because clearly, the cheese consumption has nothing to do with the number of people who strangle themselves in their own bedsheets and die.
Well, they say that if you eat cheese before you go to bed, it's supposed to give you bad dreams.
That's probably true.
Yeah.
Yeah, so they could have a fit after a bad dream and strangle their bedsheets. But there's
no evidence that any of the people who died had eaten cheese.
Like, here's another example. Divorce rate in Maine correlates with the per capita consumption of margarine.
Wife gets fat, you leave her.
but is that the consumption of margarine in Maine?
No, in the US.
Well, then there's no correlation.
Yeah, then there's no correlation.
Direct,
the age of Miss America correlates with murders by steam, hot vapors, and hot objects.
Who dies by hot vapor?
Is that like kettles or something?
Yeah, death by hot vapor.
In 1999, there were 7 murders by steam. The age of Miss America was 24. Mm. Now let's fast forward to 2003, 4 murders by steam, 22 years old. 3 murders by steam, 19 years old.
Wow.
Mm. Damn. Is that like locking somebody in a steam room or sauna or something?
No? Probably, yeah, it could be. The total revenue generated by arcades correlates with computer science doctorates awarded in the US.
Okay.
Worldwide non-commercial space launches correlates with sociology doctorates awarded in the US.
Are these legitimate surveys?
These are just taking two observations and putting them in a graph and seeing if they correlate, and they do.
Yeah.
And that's the crazy thing. Like, you see medical surveys and they go, "Oh, look, there's a correlation between all these people. It shows that all these people got better when we gave them this medicine." But it really doesn't mean anything because you can correlate anything with anything.
Yeah. Mm. Cool.
Fun fact.
So, since we won't be doing any more episodes soon, I think it's time that we talk about some movies that are coming out this winter.
Ooh.
Because there's nothing I love more than
a winter movie preview.
Nothing I love more than talking about movies that haven't come out yet that'll probably be really, really terrible or mediocre. Mm. So there's an article I wrote with my top 20 most anticipated of the winter, but we won't cover all of these top 20. We'll cover a few. At number one is...
This is his...
Stairwares. The... First, say
it's Star Wars, man.
Oh, Star Wars. Well, I love Star Wars, and there's nothing better than new Star Wars.
Oh my god!
And there's not much more I can say about it.
The show is just going downhill.
Let's just move past Star Wars because you guys are lame and don't like Star Wars.
What? I love Star Wars.
At number two,
we were originally intended for 20 episode season, but they cut it out.
at number two, we have a boring film for boring grown ups, which is Steve Jobs. No,
I'm
joking.
I'm actually kind of looking forward to it.
I'm really excited for Steve Jobs. I think Michael Fassbender as Steve Jobs and all that is nonsense. But Aaron Sorkin has never written a bad film or a bad television episode.
Well, this could be his day, but we'll see.
We'll see. I mean, Brad Bird had never made a bad film until Tomorrowland, and dear God, that was awful. So everyone loses eventually. Yeah. But for now, Aaron Sorkin's on a winning streak, and Steve Jobs could be really, really terrific. Also got Jeff Daniels and Seth Rogen.
Yeah, I think
Seth Rogen
will be pretty good.
I think so. Jeff Daniels is great.
What role is Kate Winslet? The daughter?
She's some woman working with him. She's not his... she's not the wife. The daughter is played by an actress called Alison Sudol, who has been cast in Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them. She's a new. She's a singer, I think. So, but she's playing the. But it's, you see, it's set over 3 decades, I think. So the daughter's played by different actresses at different ages.
I really want to see The Revenant.
So do I.
Oh my god! I saw the trailer. Just like the cinematography is just beautiful. I don't care what the story is. There's just want to see this.
The thing with The Revenant is there's been some issues with the shooting. Like they've had huge problems with the weather, with climate. They're still shooting this film,
and it's coming out.
It's coming out in like 3 months.
Will DiCaprio get an Oscar?
If it comes out, he'll get one.
Really?
If the movie comes out.
If the movie comes out, he'll win. But I mean, if the movie gets pushed back, then no, he won't. But no, I think he's guaranteed one if the movie comes out. Yeah, I mean, it's impossible that this could. There's no way this is going to be a bad film. First of all, it's impossible. Like, no, even if it has no dialogue in it. So long as it looks beautiful, and so long as DiCaprio does a lot of, you know, intense stares.
So there's no dialogue.
Stares.
It's just like grunting.
I think there's a bit of dialogue. Some, but not a lot. So I think if DiCaprio just does a lot of intensity, he will get an Oscar, because Michael Keaton not winning for Birdman actually helped DiCaprio's chances, because it means the Oscars don't like to give people the same things over and over. So if one actor had won for an Iñárritu film last year, they probably would be less likely to give another one. But I think DiCaprio has this absolutely sealed as long as the film comes out on time.
Some film will probably come out.
I don't think he cares about an Oscar, though.
Oh, I think he does. I think he's only working to get Oscars nowadays. I think he'd retired otherwise. I think if DiCaprio wasn't striving for an Oscar, I think he'd probably exclusively work with Scorsese and not make any other films, because I don't think he needs to, and I think he'd rather do environmental stuff.
Yeah.
He doesn't seem to enjoy working in cinema, except when he's working with Scorsese. And they're working together again. But moving on, we have another Western coming out, which is very different kind of film, which is The Hateful Eight.
Lots of dialogue.
It's very dialogue
heavy. Oh my god, that looks...
This film is like largely set in one room now. It's really another version of Reservoir Dogs, where basically it's just a lot of interesting characters put together, and Tarantino's just going to write the hell out of it and just make a really, really... witty and insightful project.
Bloody.
And the most exciting thing about this for me is that it was announced last month that Ennio Morricone is going to be scoring the film. And he is, without a doubt, like number two greatest film composer of all time. And he's very, very old now. Several members of my family went to see him in concert last year. I didn't get to go. But or 2 years ago, but he's composed, you know, The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, Once Upon a Time in America, Once Upon a Time in the West. He's like one of the greatest composers. So he is like the human embodiment of the cinematic Western. And the fact that Tarantino, I mean, he used some of his old music in Django, and the fact that he's gotten him to compose an original score for this is a huge thing for the film. And the fact that this year, the best original score Oscar is going to be a race between Morricone for The Hateful Eight and John Williams for new Star Wars music. That's going to be a really tough category.
This is no connection to The Hateful Eight. Django Unchained.
No, it doesn't. No,
all his films are set in the same universe, I think.
But Samuel L. Jackson,
I know, yeah,
could not be playing sheriff in the Wild West and also be playing a hitman in Pulp Fiction. But you know, there are theories about Pixar in which they're all set in the same universe. Oh, that's more likely because there are no repeat characters. But
I don't think Pixar was thinking about that too much.
No, I don't think so.
They have all their
oh no, they are. They have these Easter eggs. Yeah. They have the Pizza Planet van in every one of their films without fail.
Yeah. Like as well in The Incredibles, I think there was one of the cars from Cars movie.
There's a lot of stuff in Pixar films. Right, actually, they have created somewhat of a universe.
Spectre is coming out.
Shane, you like these kind of films?
I do. I enjoy.
I mean, what was the last one?
Skyfall is an excellent film. I think it's really, really good. Very impressed by it. I am not a James Bond like big fan. I think that Casino Royale is not a masterpiece. But Skyfall,
I like Casino Royale.
It's not like
Quantum of Solace is pretty terrible.
Mm.
For people who like James Bond films, it's not good. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I guess. I think Skyfall.
They're just really dark movies.
Was a James Bond film for people who don't like James Bond films.
That's what I'm saying.
I liked it. Yeah. Women liked it. And that's rare for James Bond films. So, like...
Women liked it. Why did women like
it? Because it wasn't as sexist as the other James Bond films. It wasn't as hyper-masculine
yeah.
in its tone, I guess. And it was just, it was a more mainstream.
So it just doesn't make it.
Contemporary action film. It was more Nolan-y. It was more, it was less of a sort of, you know, this is British and we're, you know, it was more of a sort of, I guess it was an Americanized James Bond.
I think James Bond is kind of like an easy watch, you know, whereas that was definitely not.
But I think as a result, I think it was a superior work of cinema. Like, and I think Spectre is basically just another version of Skyfall.
Was it as enjoyable?
Oh, I think it was. I mean, I don't enjoy flimsy, throwaway sort of spy films. I mean, some of the early Bonds are very enjoyable, but I think all of the 80s, 90s ones, I wouldn't be able to sit through those.
Mm.
There's just no substance to them. Whereas Skyfall had stakes. Mm. It had stakes and it had a great song, great score by Thomas Newman, who's come back for this. And it just had a great, it respected the brand. Like it, you know, it was the 50th anniversary of Bond when it came out. It paid respect to the brand. It didn't mock it the way that a lot of contemporary sort of reboots do with their franchises.
It's kind of like
franchises.
Christopher Nolan's Batman.
It was the Dark Knight of Bond, and
I didn't like the Dark Knight when it came out either. So.
Okay,
and it last night again. I was watching it.
Television schedulers are really creative.
TCM.
Batman Begins is the best.
TCM. It's a good channel. I don't have TCM. Batman Begins is the best. So that's Spectre. We also have a couple other films: Crimson Peak, The Martian, the new film from Guillermo del Toro and Ridley Scott.
Was the Hateful Eight script leaked? Before
it was, yeah.
I assume it's changed now. But
I'd say he's changed it quite a bit.
Hunger Games.
Do we
even excited for Hunger Games?
I'll be honest. I
saw the first one.
I've seen them all.
I've seen them
opening
all.
Weekend in the cinema, and even last year I literally my enthusiasm for the, like, okay, I read the books when they originally came out.
I didn't.
I read them back in 2008, 2009 when I was, you know, young and interested in certain, when young adult literature was just becoming a fad. Like, I was, you know, I thought Twilight was enjoyable stuff, and I read The Hunger Games, and I thought the books were excellent, and the films have really not been up to the standard of the first two books, at least. But you know what, Mockingjay Part 1 was an interesting film. It had very little so action bad. It was reasonable, but it was like, if you took it as a standalone film, it was an interesting way of introducing a very broad blockbuster audience to a sort of political intrigue sort of film. And it was so quiet and lacking in action and energy that I sort of respected what it was doing. I don't think it was maybe not doing it intentionally. I think it was literally they had no story to put in the film. But I thought having a film which is marketed as big action blockbuster for teenagers, and having it just consist of several extended scenes of political masterminds sort of organizing a propaganda campaign. I thought that's actually a really interesting idea, and I respected what they did with it. But
false advertising.
Most people didn't like it very much. So what can I say? Mockingjay Part 2 is going to be explosions and guns, bows and arrows, and garbage. But you know what? I'll probably be in to see it opening day, just because I kind of have to, because I've been doing it for 4 years now. I'm not going to stop.
Might as well keep going.
Just going to race through a few other films here. We got Steven Spielberg's Bridge of Spies. We've got Tom McCarthy's Spotlight. We got Robert Zemeckis. All the great directors are out this winter. Robert Zemeckis' The Walk. We've got Oliver Stone's Snowden, starring Nicolas Cage in a sporting role. Oliver Stone directed it.
Did Nicolas Cage win an Oscar? He did
for Leaving Las Vegas. Excellent film. We never did it as Nicolas Cage of the Week. We will next season.
Yeah.
Pixar's The Good Dinosaur. We have Roland Emmerich's Stonewall, which is a gay rights drama. Then we have The Last Witch Hunter. Any of you as excited for this as I am? Vin Diesel fighting witches.
This isn't a sequel.
This is an original film. Original.
Was there some witch hunter there recently?
There was a film with Nicolas Cage called Season of the Witch. And there was a film called Hansel and Gretel Witch Hunters with Jeremy Renner and Gemma Arterton.
Oh, dear God.
But The Last Witch Hunter has Michael Caine in it. And I don't know. It'll be rubbish. But you know what? The trailer is fun. So watch the trailer and then forget that this exists. You'll have done your job.
Enjoy.
You will have fulfilled your duty. Enjoy is the new film from David O. Russell, who made American Hustle.
Mm.
David O. Russell, American Hustle. And it's got Jennifer Lawrence and Robert De Niro and Bradley Cooper. Because who else would David O. Russell ever make a film with?
He did New Silver Linings Playbook.
Yes, he did.
Oh,
yep.
Of course, yeah.
And, he actually did Silver Linings Playbook.
Every film that has ever had Jennifer Lawrence and Bradley Cooper and Robert De Niro together has been directed by David O. Russell. That is a fact.
American Hustle was good.
Was very good, yes. Silver Linings Playbook, not so much.
Barrett likes it.
Yeah. Who? I don't know who that is. Barrett's not part of our 99% universe.
He's missing in the chair.
He's missing
right
in
here.
The chair. So
Shane is just putting his legs up on Barrett's chair.
I think we should...
Hot new track?
Briefly, listen to your hot new track.
It's... First of all, I don't even like Mumford & Sons, but here we go.
I've heard this before. I heard it in a taxi once. It was on the radio. It's called The Wolf, isn't it?
Yeah.
When I installed Apple Music, this was one of the first songs I listened to, and I hated it, so... That's not terrible. This is so unlike what Mumford & Sons did when they started. I mean, Little Lion Man is an amazing song. Okay. And then they just went rapidly, they went downhill with their stuff. This isn't their style at all. It's not that I remember it. It's fine. It does the job.
Just the job.
I don't think music should just do the job.
What job does music
do? Certain kinds of entertainment can just do the job, right? I think
sounds more like Snow Patrol.
Like, it does sound like Snow Patrol. I think magazines can do the job. I think that food can just do the job. Yeah. But I think that film and music and literature should achieve something. You've turned it down really low.
Super.
Bring it back up now for the chorus. Who does this sound like?
Indie rock.
No, this doesn't sound like Snow Patrol to me.
This sounds like Kool Line.
Yeah, maybe.
It's like a less heavy version of Muse.
No, it doesn't like. Doesn't really sound like Muse. No, Muse is way more operatic. Muse always has. It's very operatic, sort of abrasive, orchestral music that Muse does. They bring orchestra to a sort of rock bass, and some of their music is absolutely terrific, but not recently.
Most of it is rubbish.
They've been too funky recently. I'm not a fan of their funk stuff. Yeah. But
funk on this. You have to get funk right.
Yeah, but no, Black Holes and Revelations is an amazing album. Some great songs on that.
There you go.
Hot new track, 2006.
Not so hot new track.
Not so new.
Just a new track.
Cold old track.
Michael's track.
Before we finish for our first season, we need to remind people about our low six serial projects. First of all,
Can I play this simplicity music?
Go for it.
Because I just wanted to make a use out
you
of it.
Make
it's
use
like
of this
it's
quality
really
music.
Pleasant music.
Yeah,
this is our hot new track. Actually,
yeah.
This actually is just so nice.
Like the background music on the Nintendo Wii.
Yeah.
I was never allowed a Nintendo Wii.
Because on the Wii they use the Wurlitzers, yeah. Let's just listen. Alright.
Okay. So leave it on. So yeah. Hashtag no locky the doors. Today's episode is officially titled Hashtag no indie the podcast. It's not funny. Okay, no locky the doors is our campaign to keep bathroom doors open around the world. It's our low stakes
cereal. Everyone has to take a crap.
Yeah. So it started because our school was keeping the bathroom doors open. And frankly, I was disgusted by this.
Locked.
I'm locked. And I'm still, yes. And I'm working.
Lock the door.
Yeah. And I'm working to have this project fixed. And we'll give you an update next time we do a show on that. But additionally, bathroom doors, of course, are being locked in public. Public bathrooms are not being made available to the public. And this is disgraceful. So we want you to write to your local government in Ireland or anywhere to keep bathroom doors open forever and to local schools and colleges as well.
Bathrooms cost money.
Also, Low Six Cereal, the Japanese Knotweed Awareness Project, have been doing some great work. They are they're going to the National Plowing Championships and they're handing out flyers warning people about Japanese Knotweed, which is taking over West Cork and is absolutely...
Knotweed.
It's Japanese knotweed.
It's not weed.
It's this terrifying knotweed, and it grows.
Weed. It's like a weed you find in your garden.
Yeah. Oh, it's not marijuana.
Oh, it's not marijuana. This is like a disgusting, like fern. Oh, it's ivy. It's nightmarish.
Oh, and I saw an article on the Irish Independent Facebook page about these new spiders coming to Ireland, the size of mice. It was like spiders the size of mice.
Excuse me while I go
invading Irish homes.
Excuse me while I go lock myself in a metal box.
Oh, that looks terrible.
Oh, Lord. Spiders are just not fun creatures at all.
I have one living in my shower.
So do I.
I've been there for like 3 weeks.
I was always living in my house.
Bath spiders.
Yeah.
No, he just moves around every day.
Yeah. So,
I couldn't see him.
I love spiders.
I was
they're great
like,
creatures.
Should we wrap up the show?
I think we shall. You know, for when we're like doing the credits and stuff, I'll just play Simplicity. It's that kind of music.
See you in a year.
It's not really that kind of music. I like your closing music.
Oh, yeah, but I will. Okay. I'll play the closing
so,
music as well.
So, the 99%. What is it?
Co-production
of Carb Digital and Buzzhub Entertainment. Carb Digital is
a great website designing hosting company. You can visit carbdigital.com for the latest information. Someone say what Buzzhub is. Shane, what's Buzzhub?
It's a website for your movies and TV reviews.
Very good. News, reviews, podcasts, interviews, and more.
Lucien's opinions, which sometimes he says don't matter.
You can find out more about everything I do on my website, which is lucienwd.eu, where you can find out about all my work. Michael is at McAndrewTweets on Twitter, and I am
revolutionary. Oh,
that is true.
Shane. Show Phil Brindle actually got married.
Yes.
Well, we never talked about that. Yeah, congratulations to Phil
Brindlow and Fintan Lynch.
Friend of the show.
On their silver partnership. Shane is on Twitter, ShaneK909. He tweets every day. He's very active on there.
If someone follows me before Sunday evening, I will tweet every day for a week.
Okay. And you can also find Shane on Tinder.
What's your name on
Shane
Tinder?
Is quick, Shane Kelly. Shane, you can't search for people on Tinder. You just have to wait for them to show up, and you have to be in Galway, and you have to be under 18.
This just proves that I don't use Tinder, so yay.
Oh, well, neither do I.
I'm proud.
I don't know what.
No, you did.
I don't know what you're talking about. So thanks for tuning in. Thank you to thanks to all the guests we've had this season. You can listen back to all the interviews on 99pshow.com throughout the year. We had Graham Smith, who spoke to us about Republic and the work they do to try and have the British monarchy replaced with an elected president. We're going through all of our guests now.
Episode 2 was
Ray Ortega.
Yeah, and then
Ray Ortega talked to us about 10 years of podcasting, where the medium's going, what he does in his life as a professional podcaster.
Yep.
And fun fact, the only guest we've had from the United States.
Yep. Episode 3.
Episode 3, we had
Eden.
Sven Hansen Love, the co-writer and inspiration for the film Eden. And in episode 4, we had the star of his film, who plays him in the film, Félix de Givry. In episode 5, we had local general election candidate Niall Tuchel, who spoke about the process of running a campaign and his hopes for next year's election. Actually, by the time we do another episode, that election may possibly have taken place. So good luck to Niall in that. But all other candidates also, good luck to you, because we're impartial. Episode 6, we spoke to Michael Nugent from Atheist Ireland about the discrimination in schools against unbaptized children. Episode 7, we spoke to Harry McCann, one of Ireland's leading youth entrepreneurs. Mm-hmm. And thanks again to Kira Judge and Ellie Lochran from today's interview. That's all we have time for
today. That's all we have time for. Let's cue the
That's
music.
All we have time for the year. That's sad.
Yeah. All right. We'll see you next
thanks
week.
Thanks to Shane for joining us today. And before, thanks to our special guests from episode 1, Barra Convery and Owen Dobie. Thanks to everyone who facilitated recording, Kevin McAndrew, who's been around a bit today. And thanks to Michael's family for allowing us to do this in their home.
Existing.
Thank you to Michael.
You're welcome. Thank you to Lucy.
For paying for the domain name and building the website
so
and
money.
Doing the editing of the episodes.
All
thanks
right.
to me for all my hard work.
Let's leave it there.
Goodbye, everybody.
Bye.
Say your goodbyes, Michael.
Adios, amigos.
Nuts. Got him.